Presenting for the HD Hurt Comfort 2025 Fest, Tangerine by Dodger Cadaver. Rating explicit. Summary. Harry's pretty sure he's too annoying to love. Draco loves him all the time. Harry has been awake for 3 days, maybe four, when the Wilfer's trolley jiggles in the sweet aisle at Tesco, and he now hears a voice crashing into the rainbow of items on the nearest shelf. He blinks hard, his heart pounding up out of his chest and into his throat. Everything's ruined. He's ruined his entire life. Probably he should have a nap. But it's impossible to sleep these days. Today, Bill Weasley, who's the head cursebreaker at the Ministry's newish department, came to Grimmauld Place, where Harry'd been hiding, and asked if he'd quit without saying anything.
No, Harry said. I'll be back tomorrow, Harry said. Bit under the weather, Harry said.
And now he's here in the sweetheart Tesco, staring at the shelf, waiting for his vision to clear. When it finally does, Harry starts backwards.
Oh!
An old lady cries, jerking her trolley around him.
Sorry, sorry.
Harry huddles closer to the shelf so he can peer down at the orange and silver rectangles in a neat row. He's got his hand out, hovering over the row, debating whether to get two or three tubes or sweep all of them into his trolley when he imagines how Draco's face will look. Disinterested. Annoyed. Harry pulls his hand back, abandons the trolley in the aisle, and leaves without buying anything. He doesn't go back to the ministry the next day, but the day after. Harry drags himself into the shower, then into his open front uniform robes with his uniform shirt and new trousers, and one holster underneath. His clothes are awful. They feel awful. All before dawn. His first breath of fresh morning air slightly sweet, slightly silvery, like Draco's magic, and he almost turns round and goes back inside. Can't, though. He's got to go in now, or he's not going to go in at all. Thought he'd be less obvious going in this early, but 5 steps out of the mystery flues, he's already attracting stares. And not the old kind. The kind that says,
"Is that Harry Potter? Is he ill? Should he be here looking like that?"
Harry nods and waves imaginary greetings until he's up on level 2, and then he locks his office door behind him, folds his arms on his desk and puts his head down. Something wakes him a few seconds later. A few minutes? His glasses have smashed themselves into his nose. He scrunches his face, blinking hard. What the bloody hell is that noise? Oh, it's someone knocking on his office door.
Right,
he shouts.
Yeah.
Then fumbles some wonders at the door until it pops open. Bill steps into the threshold, his arms crossed over his chest.
Everything okay?
Sure.
Harry's voice cracks mid-word. If he doesn't say anything about it, maybe he can pretend it never happened. But the brick just sort of hangs there between them. Bill purses his lips.
Doesn't look like everything's okay.
Why not?
Harry reaches for his hair, then shoves his hand into his lap. He silently wrestles away the urge to rip off his uniform, because stripping naked in front of Bill would feel better than this.
I mean, everything's so great.
Desk looks a bit dodgy.
What about it?
Harry checks his desk. There's nothing alive on it. No rubbish either.
It's in the middle of the room, mate. Weird bloody angle. Cursed?
No.
Harry flashes a bright smile at Bill, and from Bill's answering wince, he figures it's not worth the effort.
Just needed a change of scenery.
Unlike Harry, Bill doesn't look like a disaster. He looks cool, like he always has, with an authority layered over how bloody cool he is.
We can move your office if it's...
No.
Harry can't look at Draco's desk. That's true. He moved his own desk the last time he was in, some 2 weeks ago, maybe? But Draco hasn't quit. He's just on personal leave. And even though they're separated or whatever, and Harry wants to scream or cry or lie down on the ground every second of the day, somebody else will sit in this office over his dead body.
I mean, no, I'm fine. Was there anything else?
Bill watches him for a few more beats. Harry doesn't know whether he should pray to be fired, or pray to be put on leave, or just quit.
I'm leaving!
Percy calls from somewhere down the hall.
I have a schedule, Bill, and I won't be deterred!
Sounds like the old Percy. He would have said that about working for the minister, but he's not. Percy showed up on the first day of training for the ministry's new curse-breaking programme, wanting vengeance for Fred. And he took it out on all the curses. Not that the curses haven't fought back. He's got a burn scar and a strip over half his face,
and has to wear charm sleeve over his one arm to keep his elbow stable after a cursed chew through the joint.
I'm coming,
Bill calls back.
I'd rather you didn't.
Shut up, Purse. I'm coming. Have a look at this, will you?
Bill takes a little box, looks like iron, out of his pocket and tosses it to Harry. It clinks on his wedding band. Oh, definitely iron. Harry resists the urge to clench his fists until the iron starts to burn his palm.
Right,
Harry croaks.
Sure, yeah.
He sets it on the desk and pats its holster, frowning at the box a bit.
Right.
Thanks, says Bill,
and then his footsteps retreat. Harry says right a few more times until he's sure Bill's out of range. He's learned nothing about the iron box or what might be inside. Absolutely nothing. Draco's desk sits empty behind his back. There are spells he should cast, but not one of them comes to mind. Harry can't fathom taking his wand out of his holster. Ghost echoes of Draco's quill and parchment scratch behind him. His heart thuds and thuds and thuds, offbeat with the quill scratches that don't exist, until Harry thinks widely of the tangerine spangles, until he jumps to his feet, knocking over his chair, and doesn't bother to shut the office door behind him. The checkout girl at Tesco chews the inside of her lip while Harry shovels tubes of spangles into the extended pockets of his robes. It's not until he's out on the pavement that he realises he's forgot to glamour his uniform. He didn't say costume either. Too late now. Harry's blood is full of spangles, and all he's done is come to the doorstep that used to be his. To Draco's doorstep. The sun's just starting to creep over the tops of the townhouses. A thin apricot glow like the world's burning down somewhere in the distance. It feels bad. So bad. All of it. Connaught Square's like looking at Grimmauld Place with the mirror of Eversed. Everything dark has turned light. New leaves rustle on the sycamore trees in the private garden at Harry's back. His lips are numb. He's got a lump in his throat the size of a bludger. He never used to knock before. Harry lifts his hand up and up and up, and raps on the door below the silver knocker, which looks normal from the pavement, but is actually a ring made up of a dragon and a phoenix chasing each other. Nobody answers. A great teeters behind Harry. Draco used to say, "Oh, listen, a relative of yours." And Harry would say, "What?" And Draco would gesture towards the garden with an expression of ecstasy on his face until Harry rolled his eyes and dragged him in for a kiss that, 9 times out of 10, led to a shag. Harry's lightheaded because he's holding his breath. He breathes. Feels like the first time he's ever done it. The air goes in all weird and cold. Harry knocks again.
"Sorry," he practices, his voice barely cooperating, "for stopping by so early."
The door opens fast, catching him off guard. He sucks in a half gasp and chokes on it, tries to cough discreetly and inhales more spit. Harry hacks away, his eyes watering.
"Sorry,"
he finally manages.
"Sorry."
He straightens up and very nearly passes out. Drake is standing just inside the threshold, looking absolutely the softest Harry has ever seen him look. One of his cheeks is pink and creased from the pillow. His hair is a squashy lopsided bun on the top of his head. He's wearing a set of flannel pyjamas in Stuart Royal tartan with an embroidered snitch fluttering poncily across the breast pocket. They cost, like, 900 galleons or something. And Harry only knows because Draco told him about the tartan and the galleons and the Swiss tailor or whoever made them about 900 times. Only those are Harry's pyjamas. The set Draco got himself 2 Christmases ago are Stuart Hunting Modern or Green.
"Are you all right?"
Draco's sleek, rough voice breaks the silence between them gently, but it tears through Harry like a hex. He pushes his curled fist into his side to keep them from folding over.
"It's 7.
"Yeah."
"In the morning."
"Yeah,"
Harry agrees again.
"Sorry for stopping at this, you know, this hour, the 7 o'clock hour, or whatever."
Draco blinks.
"Why don't you come in?"
This is the worst thing that has ever happened to Harry. This is worse than walking into the forest. This is worse than literally getting killed with an AK.
"Sure,"
Harry says, and steps inside. Draco shuts the door behind them, then steps around Harry, one hand holding the collar of his pyjamas shut like they're a dressing gown. He pads bluely down the hall towards the kitchen, his hair lined in the light from the kitchen window. Harry has no idea what to do,
Seems like there's only one option. To step out of his boots and follow Draco. One of Harry's boots tips over on the rug. He leaves it like that, and reaches into his pocket for something to hold. His fingers find a packet of spangles first. In the kitchen, Draco's levitating the tea things down from the cupboard. His little round teapot, which is an aqua colour Harry's loved since the moment he saw it. The jar of second flush loose leaf asm Draco buys from a narrow shop on Diagon Alley that refuses to reveal the name of to anyone. Two cups. One red, one dark green. Two strainers. The matching milk pitcher and sugar dish, which were owned by a king or duke, or something before Draco's mum got the set from her mum, and Draco got from his mum to play tea parties with when he was a toddler. Harry does his best not to exist. It's just so, like, normal. Watching Draco make tea while he's still half asleep. Harry didn't think he'd get to see it again. Draco's bare feet and ankles sticking out a few power inches from Harry's pyjama bottoms. The absent-minded but still elegant swishes and flicks of his hawthorn wand. Harry wants to touch the soft skin at Draco's nape so much. Wants to kiss it so much. That he grips the spangles too hard, splitting the foil. Draco startles and whips his head around to see what the noise was. Harry hides his hands behind his back.
What was that? Draco asks. Nothing.
A sleepy, sceptical look.
Are you sure? Totally.
Harry wants Draco to tell him he's a terrible liar. He wants Draco to tell him he's
so transparent, Harry, you could be made of glass.
He wants Draco to call him out. Draco goes back to making tea. He warms the teapot and sets it aside, then hums satisfactorily when the kettle starts to whistle a minute later. He measures the tea leaves, puts them in the pot, adds the water, sets a tempest. Once that's all done, Draco leans against the counter, his hands pulled into the sleeves.
My sleeves,
Harry thinks insanely.
My sleeves, those are my sleeves.
And studies Harry from all of three steps away. Both his cheeks are equally pink now, darkling to red. So are the tips of his ears. Harry goes hot under his uniform. He's the one who's, like, dressed. But he feels worse than naked with Draco's silver grey eyes on him. Like a total fraud. Like the world's greatest great tit.
So?
Draco crosses one ankle delicately over the other. Harry keeps his eyes locked on Draco's. He must look mad. He must. But if he doesn't focus on Draco's eyes, he'll look at Draco's feet. All long and naked on the kitchen floor, and to look at the arch of Draco's ankle. And then, who knows? Maybe he'll slump down to his knees and crawl across the floor and wrap both hands around Draco's ankles, and after that, he'll be stuck there forever. Because how would he get up? How would he look Draco in the face again?
You came here at 7 in the morning to watch me make tea?
No,
Harry blurts. His hands flexing instinctively around the spangles.
I mean, no, I didn't. I came to, here?
He drags himself forwards 2 steps on solid wood legs and holds out the packet. Orange glimmers between the ragged edges of the foil. That's the only pretty part left. Harry ruined the rest. He crinkled the wrapping all the fuck and made it ugly, like some cast off sweet from the rubbish bin, and he hates the sight of it in his hand. Sweat prickles all over him. It's the sort of nervous, drippy sweat that he'd get when the teacher called on him in primary school. She always had to draw attention to Harry, and his horrible clothes, and his horrible hair, and his horrible self. And Harry might as well be handing over a photo of himself at that age, and saying,
"Look, I've always been like this."
Except he can't hand over a photo of himself at that age. There aren't any. Harry grits his teeth and doesn't cry or anything. He just holds out the horrible, fucked-up packets of spangles to his perfect, probably ex-husband, and waits for death. Of course, when Harry wouldn't mind if death greeted him as a bloody friend or whatever, it's off somewhere else, harassing people just trying to go about their day. A tiny swish, almost too quiet for Harry to hear, alerts him to the fact that Draco stood up from the counter.
I'm about to die,
Harry thinks.
Now's as good a time as any. I look like an arsehole. Jesus fuck bollocks, Merlin's hellhole.
He keeps not dying. Tears keep stinging his eyes. A blur of Stuart Royal Tartan appears above the frames of his glasses. Draco covers the broken packet of tangerine spangles with one hand, his fingertips just grazing the bottom of Harry's palm. It's such a soft touch. It's such a bolt of lightning.
All the air goes out of Harry, and he can hardly haul in enough breath to talk, but he's got to.
You've got... Odgers. There are papers, right? There have to be papers.
Draco's other hand comes up. He closes them both over Harry's hand. Warm, gentle. The undamaged ends of the Spangles packet are all Harry can see now, but he can feel the bent angle pressing into his palm.
Harry!
He's never imagined, really, not once, that anyone would ever say his name like that. And definitely not Draco. Definitely not when Draco's about to tell him where the divorce papers are.
Darling, what in Merlin blessed fucking name are you talking about?
Harry is dreaming. Harry is at King's Cross, wishing he wasn't stark naked. Harry has fallen into a cursed pensive. It's just a matter of figuring out which one, because Draco knows what he's talking about. He has to know. Unless Draco's been cursed. One hard blink and Harry meets Draco's eyes. No weird colours. No trails of curse magic. His cheeks are still... Merlin's arse, they're so pink. But he's not got any obvious signs of being hexed or cursed or confounded.
I'm talking about...
Harry waves his free hand about like a massive twat. It feels bloody wrong to let it just flop by his side afterwards. So he rests it on top of Draco's hand. And now they're standing in the middle of the kitchen, Harry hasn't stepped foot in for weeks, and clasping hands like two elderly wicks leaving a tea shop. But that's not even important.
I'm obviously... The whole... We... You... Left.
Draco's eyes swing left, then right, like they do when Draco's trying to remember. His lashes kiss his cheeks with every movement like he's in a Renaissance painting or something. Harry's heart is going to go up in a cloud of spangle-coloured smoke.
I didn't.
Draco shakes his head a bit, like that'd be proof.
You literally, like, walked out of the house?
Harry can't actually remember how it felt to have Tommy cast the AK at him with perfect clarity anymore. Just like he can't remember exactly how it felt to nearly die in the Chamber of Secrets, or nearly get kissed by 100 Dementors. The thing that happened with Draco is much more recent, obviously. But what Harry remembers about that night has the same glasses-off blur as the moments he thought were the worst until he watched Draco leave.
You said, Harry, you have to have this, and you left.
Draco watches him say all this with his head cocked a tiny bit to the side. His lips slightly parted and a concerned crease in his forehead. Takes everything Harry's got not to close his eyes. It's murdering him to be this close to Draco and not kiss him. Not even a little. And he just does not want to watch Draco's expression go from mild confusion to irritation to anger to nothing. Because Harry won't get to see him after he kicks Harry out. Harry stands there, sweating in his curse-breaker robes and awkwardly clasping hands with his ex-husband of any moment now, and waits for death. Slowly, as if coming out of some sort of daze or trance or whatever, Draco steps in close and holds Harry's face with his ridiculously elegant, perfect hands.
Harry,
he says again, even softer, even gentler.
I was talking about the riots.
Harry is hallucinating. Harry is a muggle hell times a thousand. Harry has lost his mind. It's hard enough trying to remember anything when Draco is all pink and wearing Harry's pyjamas and his eyes have gone all big and soft like they do when Harry's completely lost the plot. Oh, Merlin's massive saggy bollocks. Harry's completely lost the plot. He knows what Draco is talking about, but he doesn't. He doesn't.
What?
He whispers, his mouth dry, his throat aching.
The riots,
Draco repeats. He traces little arcs on Harry's cheekbones with the pads of his thumbs. Harry lifts both hands and knocks them into Draco's arms twice before he manages to hook them near Draco's wrists, bending the packet of spangles even more in the process.
That's all I meant, Monoclair. That's where I was going.
But why? Why?
What has Harry done? What the bloody bollocks was he thinking? He can't remember ever having a thought before. Draco's hands press gently into Harry's cheeks. He leans down to brush his forehead against Harry's, bringing their eyes to exactly the same level.
Harry, listen.
The difference in Draco's tone is so subtle that Harry's sure that if he pointed out to anyone else on Earth,
they would say there was nothing different. They'd be wrong. There's what, like a blink between Draco saying, "Listen," and the sound hitting Harry's ears. And maybe one more before Harry nods. All jerky and wrong. But in that time, the sunny kitchen blurs out in Harry's periphery, and the crumpled spangles packet starts mattering. Even the clothes that have been driving Harry mad become nothing to him. Are you listening?
Yeah.
It was Sunday. Sunday unrolls memories like a length of parchment. Sunday means a crowded, rowdy brunch at the Burrow. And Harry and Drake had gone, because they always go. They always went before. They went. Everyone was there, plus more people, because Gabrielle, Fleur's sister, had come too, and brought her girlfriend from uni. And that didn't bother Harry until every child at the brunch had started some screaming contest in the garden at the same time that Gabrielle's girlfriend, Madeline or Margot, something with an M, got revved up on butterbeer and set off by something Hermione said. All Harry heard was ethical. Next thing Harry knew, there were children screaming at a mind-boggling volume from one direction, and Madeline or maybe Margot giving a rapid-fire lecture from another about how change is an illusion or some bollocks. And the more she taught, the more it seemed. It really seemed like it was about Draco. Some commentary on Harry's husband. And Harry bloody hated it. The feeling he wanted to express to Madeline, or maybe Margot, was crystal clear. But all he could think to say was, "Shut up, shut up, shut up." So he didn't say anything, and gripped Draco's hand on the table instead.
"I wanted to flip the table over."
"Yes," Draco agrees. Fondly, like he's actually fond of Harry for being like he is. "But you didn't, because Murray is 21 and became overexcited about philosophy. It had nothing to do with me."
"Well, it felt..."
"I know. And you exercise incredible restraint, my darling." Harry makes a growling, whinging noise that he would never, ever make in front of anyone else. "I think," Draco says, as if he's just now coming to this conclusion, "that perhaps we shouldn't have gone straight to Andromeda's."
"We had to.
Teddy would have survived. He's always been good at entertaining himself. But of course he didn't have to, because we went straight there." They'd apparated to Andromeda's for tea, but Teddy wasn't interested in tea. Teddy was interested in flying, so they flew, one seeker's match after another, until Andromeda had come out and shouted at them through a sonorous, because Teddy had to get his school things ready for the next day.
"We didn't have tea," says Harry.
Because the next bit he remembers is mostly tight hugs and feeling barely contained rage about having to flew home, about having to change places again, about the distance between Andromeda's sitting room and their sitting room like a bloody child.
"We came home."
And when they stepped out of the grate, Draco said, "I'll be off then." And Harry snapped,
"What? Why?"
And Draco said,
"To go to the cafe."
And Harry yelled,
"I didn't ask you to go to the bloody cafe. I don't even want it."
And that devolved into a shouting match. Harry's shouting. Draco speaking loudly and clearly, but not shouting. That ended in Draco kissing Harry pointedly on the cheek and leaving. Harry sags, shame landing hotly, heavily on his shoulders, and weighing him down until he can sink into the floor. His face drops into Draco's hands. He lets his eyes unfocus.
"No."
Draco leans closer, his chin brushing Harry's temple.
"Don't hide." "I have to go," Harry says miserably.
If he has to look Draco in the eye again, he'll die.
"Go, then." "Let go of my face, then." "I shan't, but I have to."
"Fine." Draco turns onto his hands and takes Harry's, ignoring the spangles. He drops his other hand to Harry's waist. There's really nowhere for Harry to put his free hand, so he rests it on the curve of Draco's neck and stares unfocusedly over his shoulder. Draco doesn't so much step as lean. Harry moves one of his feet automatically. Merlin's saggy ass. He is not doing this. He is not going to let Draco distract him by secretly dancing.
"Leave again if you must, but first..."
"I don't want to."
"First, we'll play our game."
Draco makes his steps really small, which is unfair, because if Harry accuses him of trying to dance,
He'll say he's only swaying. Why did you marry me? You have to be sick of this. That's not why. There's no way you want to be 10 points from Gryffindor. An old competitive fire flares to life in Harry's chest. Because I'm in love with you. And I love you. And you asked. I think you're forgetting something. More tiny steps, now with a bit of a turn. I distinctly recall you saying something about my peerless talent with your dick. Harry finishes. He hates this game. He hates being the kind of person who has to play this game. He lets himself hate it with everything he's got, which isn't much once he's accounted for how he feels about Draco. We don't have to do this. Nonsense. Why did I marry you? Harry scowls. His heart pounds horribly against his ribs. Every answer that comes to mind is one that will lose him another 10 fake points from Gryffindor.
You shouldn't have. I don't know why anyone ever would. Because he thought I'd be different. Because I was there. Because I said yes.
He's tried all of them before. Every single one. Draco turns them through a patch of sunlight on the floor.
Because you love me. Harry sighs.
When? Harry rests his head on Draco's shoulder. His entire face is a fireball. This is so needy and pathetic and unattractive.
All the time.
2 points to Gryffindor. Would you say
2?
Yes, it's rather generous of me. Would you say all the time includes every minute of the day and night?
Yeah.
What about when you're tired?
And
when you're hungry?
Mm-hmm.
And when a lot of children scream at once? Harry turns his face into Draco's pyjamas. His own pyjamas. And groans. Was that a yes?
Yes,
Harry hisses. They're still going in a circle. Draco is not even trying to disguise the dancing anymore. Harry really wishes it didn't lull him like this. Like he's totally predictable.
Fine, yes. Do we have to?
When you need to eat arias and lentil soup every Wednesday and...
And babusa.
And babusa every Wednesday and Sunday for 3 months and counting. Yes, is the answer. Draco loves Harry then too. But a lump appears in Harry's throat, and more hot pressure centres in his cheeks, and he can't breathe. He can't breathe.
I don't need arias.
Harry's voice quavers. Horrible. Humiliating.
I need you.
Is it really about the arias? Draco whispers.
No,
chokes Harry. They've played this game too many times. Far too many times.
Only sort of.
3 points to Gryffindor. And?
And?
Harry swallows past the ball of emotion in his throat.
And it's okay to want to count on something.
And?
And I deserve to have what I need to feel.
Harry hates this game so much. He hates it so, so much. More than he hated Tommy.
Safe.
And? He knocks his face into Draco's shoulder 3 times. Another flash of light. They're turning through the patch of sun again.
And no one gives out house points for self-denial.
Even yours.
Even mine.
He waits until the light comes round again to say anything else. Mostly because Harry feels like he might start sobbing any second.
I forgot,
he starts. His voice even wobblier than before.
I forgot about the arias. I thought you might not come back.
I always come back. And do you know what else?
What?
So do you. Harry tries to press his face into Draco's neck, but his glasses get in the way. He banches them with a bit of wandless and pushes his face into the curve there. Too hard, probably. Draco doesn't pull away. And you know that because... Harry is the worst. The... worst.
I do this every year.
8 points to Gryffindor. Tell me why.
Because.
Draco stops turning them and leans on something. The wall, maybe. He puts his arm around Harry's waist, exactly as Harry's knees go all weak and useless, and the tears in his eyes make a break for it.
Because May is really hard.
May is really hard. And for Harry, it starts in April. May feels like winning the war, but losing his sense of momentum. May feels like June is right around the corner. June and Privet Drive in the bedroom door, locked from the outside. May is making the worst mistake of Harry's life. May is walking into the forest. May is walking out of the great hall with blood on his hands. May is gravity. No matter how high Harry climbs, it always pulls him back down. Harry cries for a long time.
Oh, bollocks, the tea!
He jerks his head up from Draco's shoulder. Maybe he can save it somehow. But Draco takes Harry's face in his hands and kisses the tears off his cheeks. I'll make it again later. This is the most romantic thing Harry's ever heard, and they fill him with sweet, irresistible urgency. When he reaches for Draco to knock him furiously, Draco's already reaching for Harry. The spangles hit the floor, and Harry forgets all about them. Draco's hair is so soft, his mouth is even softer. Come on, Draco says into the kiss. Come on, come on, come here. Then he says something in French, and Harry lets himself be chivied upstairs to the bedroom, and Draco doesn't even let Harry get in his way. He just banishes Harry's clothes, then his own, Harry's own, pyjamas, and the magic is all over Harry, giving him goosebumps and shivers and making him harder than he already was. And then he's face down on the bed, his hips hiked up and Draco's pillow halfway under him and halfway off the bed. And Harry doesn't have to know anything anymore. Not when Draco is doing that with his tongue. He's a shivery mess when Draco leans up on the headboard and pulls Harry over his lap. Harry's thighs have been shaking for a while already, and they keep on shaking while he swipes his hands on Draco's shoulders until he finds a decent grip and works his hips back and forth until he can get Draco's cock to just the right place and sinks down. Only to meet Draco's fist, which is wrapped around his shaft, which is stopping Harry from taking him deeper. It's not fair. Draco's only just, like, breached him. He's practically throbbing with how much more he wants. Draco wraps his free hand around Harry's nape and looks into his eyes. Harry doesn't mind at times like these. He doesn't mind staring into liquid silver grey and letting Draco stare back, even though he's all quivery and panting and desperate. I love you all the time, Draco says, in the same solemn tone he used when they made their wedding vows. Every moment. Do you understand?
Yeah, I love every second of you.
Draco turns his hand over and strokes the underside of Harry's thigh, the corner of his mouth turning upwards just a bit. I know. Afterwards, Harry pushes Draco onto the pillows and lies on top of him. He curls their arms together and hugs his knees tight to Draco's sides and pouts into Draco's neck because Draco's skin feels good on his lips. Are you going to come get me? Draco trails his fingertips down Harry's spine, then back up.
Yes. When?
Tomorrow, if you hadn't come home by then. 2 weeks was long enough.
I really thought you were going to divorce me.
Why?
Because you didn't come to find me.
The silence goes on, just long enough. I didn't come to get you, Draco corrects. Harry gasps.
You stalked me? You stole my cloak and stalked me?
Anyone can stand on the pavement outside Grimmauld. It's like a heartbeat of silence. Less, but silence is worth 1,000 words, or whatever.
Where else?
Pardon?
Where else can anyone stand?
I haven't the faintest what you mean. Drake is so warm and naked and perfect. His heart beats just a tiny bit faster, the gorgeous lying prat.
Did you stalk me at work? He whispers.
Obviously, Drake whispers back. Harry finishes the chance for his hair and pads out of the bathroom to find Drake is standing at the foot of the bed. He's only got as far as putting pants on, and he's giggling.
What?
Harry tries to stick his hands in his pockets, but he's not dressed at all. Draco steps aside to reveal the pyramid of spangles he's made on the bed and holds up Harry's robes.
These are your robes for early spring,
They're going to drive you mad if you wear them any longer. I've switched everything out in the closet, so I was only...
He laughs again and pulls out three more packets of Spangles from one of the extended pockets.
Harry will never get over him. Not the map of pale scars on his chest. Not the curls in his hair from the shower. Not the tiniest constellation of freckles on one shoulder.
Why, Harry?
It's required by law for Harry to kiss Draco when he's pink like that and laughing, so he does.
Why did you buy so many?
Draco breathes afterwards, his eyes sparkling.
They're your favourite.
You're my favourite. Draco drops the packets on his pyramid, which falls to pieces on the bed, orange wrappers tumbling merrily to the blankets.
Just you.
Draco finds his twisted packet of Spangles underneath the kitchen table and pops one in his mouth before they leave to get Harry's arrayas and lentil soup and babusa from the Palestinian cafe in Notting Hill. Harry can't stop kissing him. He tastes like sugar and tangerines. The waxing crescent moon peeks in the bedroom window and watches Harry toss and turn and make Draco's life difficult. He can't decide whether he wants to squeeze Draco with his entire body or be squeezed. He wants them both, impossibly, feverishly. It takes time, but eventually Harry settles. His face in Draco's neck and one arm shoved under the pillow and the other around Draco's waist and their legs all tangled together. He just breathes for a while after that.
If I'd known, says Draco,
his fingers curl delicately into Harry's hair,
I would have barged in sooner. I thought you needed to be alone.
Harry scoffs.
When have I ever needed to be alone?
Last year, Draco answers instantly. And the year before that, and the year before that, and...
Okay, Merlin's bollocks. Fine. I just thought, you know, that I'd finally done it.
Become the boy who savoured it twice.
Become too annoying to her, love.
They play this game every year, but Harry's always afraid to say it out loud. He's hoping it'll get easier. He's hoping a year will come when he doesn't have to play it at all. When there's no part of him that frets over eating Arias twice a week and worries, somewhere deep down, that he'll get sent back to the Dursleys. Even though that won't ever happen. Even if they live in a house with no cupboard under the stairs. Even if Drake has promised to AK anyone who threatens Harry on sight. Even if Harry knows he means it.
Impossible.
Harry purses his lips.
Are you sure?
Try me, Potter.
Slowly, carefully, Harry sticks his tongue out and presses the tip into the hollow of Draco's neck. Draco's entire body goes taut, his fingers tightening in Harry's hair.
Sensual!
Draco tips his head back. Harry pokes him with the tip of his tongue again.
Tantalizing. Erotic.
Harry fully licks him. Draco pushes Harry onto his back and pins him, leaning down to stare into his eyes.
Lovable.
Harry licks him again.
Shaggable,
Draco pronounces, not breaking eye contact even when Harry licks him again.
Eminently fuckable.
Promise.
Draco does more than promise.
Box.
Harry only just pulls himself back from the edge of a dream.
Box, he says again. In my pocket. From work.
Draco slides his hands up from Harry's belly to his chest, and Harry covers it with his own, curling his fingers between Draco's.
Taken care of.
Which thing? Sort of thing. Was the curse?
No curse. The box was empty.
Draco's hand on his chest feels like a dream. A real dream. A real life. Harry's life.
Go back to sleep, Mon and Claire. I'll be here in the morning.
The end. You've been listening to Tangerine, written by Dodger Cadavera and read by Reverie Pie for the HD Hurt Comfort 2025 Fest. If you have enjoyed the story, please visit archiveofourown.org/works/6335149 to leave kudos and comments for Dodger Cadavera. Many thanks to Dodger Cadavera for giving permission to share this podfic. The Mars Peach Petty and Vukovic for running and organising the fest, and thank you for listening.